We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Craig is usually a fan of water cooler talk, but it's draft season, and that's all anyone wants to talk about. The Athletic has loads of articles about this year's draft. But Greg doesn't have The Athletic, so now he's filling up his water bottle in the bathroom sink. Which, to remind you, is the sink people use after they use the bathroom. Get The Athletic and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
Arkansas, Baylor, Gonzaga, Iowa, Tennessee, Texas, West Virginia, and Michigan. What do these eight universities have in common? Well, they're the only in Division I that have a top six seed in both the women's and the men's NCAA tournaments. For the women, this is the highest seed in program history. For the men, it's the first one seed since the head coach was a player. It's been special to see how these two programs feed off one another. At the head coach position, you've got Juwan Howard and Kim Barnes-Rico. They've used each other as confidants, as sounding boards, as advisors, as friends during this never-before-seen type of a season. And think about it. Who else could so seamlessly understand and relate to their individual challenges than the other? They are the two head basketball coaches at the University of Michigan. And the players are close. You can tell there's a respect and admiration and some playful competition among them all, even in this season of Zooms and masks and social distancing, and when they can't go to the other team's games. Some of those praising Naz's 50-point performance most passionately are in that men's locker room, and some of those most disheartened about the Isaiah Livers injury are in the women's locker room here in Ann Arbor. I'm sure there are similar stories across college basketball. I'm not naive in thinking that this only exists at Michigan, but I do believe that the elevation of the two programs together is something that does not happen everywhere. It doesn't happen very much at all. Case in point, that stat I gave off the top. Only seven other programs have accomplished what Michigan's two basketball programs have accomplished, and you better believe that they feel like they have done so together. We've got a jam-packed edition. NCAA tournament time is here, and we've got you covered for both here on Defend the Block.
We're talking Michigan basketball. Welcome to Defend the Block, where we'll take you inside the basketball programs with interviews, analysis, and so much more. Now, here's your host, Brian Bush.
Of course, everything is TBA these days, including, of course, surviving and advancing. We don't know how these two programs will fare, but our plans here on Defend the Block will be to bring you post-game editions for both the men's and the women's games. Here's hoping that we have an opportunity to do a total of 12 of those as the Michigan men and women will start their journeys coming up this weekend. So we will have those for you, and we'll also try to give you some men's basketball previews when we have the women's basketball post-game editions. Try to do some blending as best as we can to keep you as covered as possible on what could be a very special next few weeks for Michigan basketball. So here's the roadmap. We're going to start on the women's side, Akenrae Johnson, one of the leaders on this team, a fifth-year senior who, let's face it, we did not know if she would be able to play this season, and sure enough, she has helped lead Michigan to its highest seed ever in women's basketball. Then Eli Brooks, We'll talk to him about the journey back after the injury in the regular season finale against Michigan State, and he's coming to us from the bubble in Indianapolis. We will hear from him about what that experience has been like. And then in the back end, we'll give you a little flavor for the two potential opponents that Michigan will face off with on Saturday in the first round of the men's basketball tournament. A couple of 16 seeds, Mount St. Mary's out of the Northeast Conference and Texas Southern out of the SWAC, as we'll have Adam Pohl and Larry Hale from the Mount and the TSU radio crews, respectively. Really enjoyed those conversations with both of them. So let's start it off with the women's basketball fifth-year senior, Ken Ray Johnson. I really think you'll enjoy this conversation. Let's get it rolling. Tournament time is here. Back here on Defend the Block, we are joined by senior Ken Ray Johnson. And Ken Ray, first things first, take me back to Monday night. You're sitting there waiting patiently to see that Block M come up on the screen. What were the emotions like? What was going through your mind when you saw, yep, you guys will be heading to San Antonio and you'll be playing in the NCAA tournament?
It was a room full of emotion. You know, unfortunately, I was there my freshman year when we didn't make the tournament. So we waited the whole time for our names to get called, and our name never got called. So when you kind of go through something like that, every time it's NCAA tournament, you kind of get a little anxious because, you know, you're afraid the same thing will happen. And me and Coach were sitting there the whole time, you know, like, just like we knew we were going to be in. But, you know, it's always that little bit of, you know, you never know. So the whole time we were just sitting there anxious and just talking and waiting. But finally, when our name came across and we finally saw that we would be playing, it was just full of enjoyment for our freshmen that it's their first year here. It's our sophomores' first time because they couldn't do it last year. I haven't been since I was a junior. So it was a lot of emotion going through that room yesterday.
If I'd have told you, you know, this time last year when the world is stopping and you didn't know if you were going to be able to come back for what is a fifth year, if I'd have told you yes, you'd be in the tournament, you would qualify, you'd be a sixth seed, the top seed in program history, what would 1 year younger Ken Ray Johnson think if I told you all that?
I just didn't think that was unbelievable because I already – my future was, wasn't really set in stone last year around this time. I didn't know I was coming back. I didn't know I was going to have a fifth year. So if you would have told me, like, you not only would get a fifth year, but you would be at the highest seed in the NCAA tournament that we've ever had, I would just be like, no way. Because, first of all, we didn't finish the season. We couldn't even play. So, and then towards the beginning, I mean, last year we didn't know Leah was going to be with us. We didn't know how our team was going to be. We didn't think Iz wasn't going to be back. So it was a lot of, you know, what ifs. So if you would have told me that this time last year, I probably wouldn't believe you.
So you have the two-week department-wide pause. How have you and the team been able to kind of refocus to get back to work? I know it's been kind of an up and down last few weeks on the floor, but how have you gotten through that? Because if you just stop everything for 2 weeks and you can only really, you know, work out in your apartment or dorm or house or wherever it might be, how are you able to overcome all that?
A lot of it has to be mental. We have a lot of team meetings, a lot of meetings with Coach to talk about how we were playing at the beginning of the season. You know, we watched a lot of film during those 2 weeks. We watched film on some of our boys' team. We watched a little bit of film on them. We watched film on, like, pro teams, WBA teams, NBA teams, former players. We just watched a lot of film during that time because that's kind of the only thing that we were able to do. So we had to just visualize a lot of things that we wanted to do when we got back. And, you know, getting back was kind of hard because, you know, we got back and within, like, maybe 3 to 4 days we had to play. So we didn't really have time, you know, to try to get back in shape to, you know, go back to, you know, Michigan-style basketball. We kind of had to, you know, prep for other teams. So in doing that, it was really difficult, you know, getting back. Like you said, we've been on a little bit of a struggle bus. We've had bad shooting games, but then we've had good shooting games. And really a lot of it's just mental right now. You know, no one knows us that had to go through a worldwide or a two-week pause, you know. And then, like, with Leah, she was on two-week pause because she had COVID. And then as soon as she got back, she had to go through another two-week pause because of our team. So it was very difficult for us, you know, to kind of get back in sync. Everybody knows when you don't play with your starters for a long time, you kind of get out of sync, get out of whack when the starting lineup changes up a little bit. But I think we've done a really good job of, like, just staying positive. That's one thing that we try to do throughout the whole program is stay positive. we always say in the circle, you know, control what you can control. We can't control COVID. We can't control, you know, we couldn't control the 2 week pause, but we can control our attitude and our effort during that 2 week pause. And I think that we all did a great job of doing that. Just, you know, sometimes when you stop basketball for 2 weeks, like you said, it's hard to get back in it. But I think our mentality has been really good since then.
You mentioned Leah. She's a transfer. I knew you knew about her from a scouting report perspective. She played against you and your team several times at Nebraska. So you knew to an extent what you were getting, but just how much of an impact has she individually made on this team and in this program?
She's made a huge impact in this program. Like you said, I knew who she was. I knew what type of player she was. I knew she was a great scorer. I tell her every day in the gym, I'm like, Leah, you're one of the best scorers I've ever guarded in the Big Ten. So just, you know, just keep, like, remember that. Like, remember what you brought to this team. Remember that, you know, coach wanted you to come here. She wanted you to be here after 2 years at Nebraska. But we all knew she was a great scorer. But one thing we didn't really see is that she's an unbelievable passer. She can find reads, pass the ball very well. And because she is such a great scorer, she has that ability to pass the ball and see things, you know, 1-2 passes ahead. She also is very athletic, so she has a great ability to rebound. She's the fastest person on our team. She beats everybody in sprints. She even beats Nas most of the time in sprints. She's very fast, very quick. So her ability to get out in transition and just be athletic, and we can just throw the ball up to her. It's a difference maker on the court. And just outside of basketball, she's a great person. You know, she's hilarious. She's a good person to be around. You know, we never know how a person's going to be, because usually, you know, when someone's good on another team, you don't really know how they act, you know. But when she came in here, that's one thing that we all noticed. Like, we were like, we say this all the time, like, Leah, you're actually pretty cool. Like, we actually like you, you know. You're pretty cool. You're pretty funny to be around. Me and her we joke all the time. We're locker buddies. So, you know, we always have our little conversations before and after practice. You know, we have very similar mentalities, very similar, like, in physique, because, you know, we're both tall, have nice, good athletic ability. But like I said, she's just a great person to be around and just a great person to be on this team. And I always say that there are friends, soulmates, and her roommates, Maddie and Michelle, they are soulmates. They are friendship soulmates. They were meant to be friends. They were meant to be together. So just adding her to their little group they have and is coming back, having all of them together, it's just a joy to see every single day. It's never a dull moment with them. So it's just great having her around.
I love that phrase, friendship soulmates. Did you come up with that or where did that come from?
I've heard it before, but we all say it in the locker room. Like, we've all said, like, they are friendship soulmates. They were meant to be friends.
I like that. That's really good. And I think you sugarcoated it a little bit by saying when you were getting ready for Leah when she was at Nebraska, you didn't like her, did you?
I mean, no, because she was just, you know, she's a great scorer.
She's good,
She didn't really say anything on the court to me. Like, it was never like an exchange of words. But I mean, she was a great player. She always got me in foul trouble because just her ability to get to the rim. So every time we played them, I was always in foul trouble. And she even told me her first or second week here, you know, she thought I wasn't going to like her because in the Big Ten tournament, I, like, scratched her. I think I gave her a black eye or something. But it was an accident. And I told her, like, sorry when I did it. And she was like, well, I thought you weren't going to like me because you gave me a black eye. And I'm like, Leah, come on. It was an accident. Like, I didn't do it on purpose. So we joke about that all the time. You know, she's like, I thought you weren't going to like me. Well, I was like, well, I thought I wasn't going to like you either. But I was like, we joke about it all the time. But no, we're very good friends. Very good friends.
That's great. We hear this a lot when it comes to transfers or if there's a trade or a free agency signing in the professional ranks. Oh, well, you know, Leah can tell Michigan all about the secrets of Nebraska. I mean, is that a real thing? Was she part of the game plan when you and your team was getting ready for Nebraska?
Yes. We were in practice and she was basically telling us all the looks, all the reads, all the plays, new plays they might put in, old plays they might use. And one thing she kind of helped us a lot was she was tell us their scout on us. So, you know, we asked her, like, I would ask her, like, Leah, what did my scout say when, you know, I played against you guys? And she told me, like, I would be in, like, the yellow. And I guess the yellow meant, like, not really a pure shooter, but can shoot the three, but more of a driver facilitator. So we all got an inside scoop on what other teams say against us. So we could, like, Nas's scout was pretty self-explanatory, you know, score, rebounder, very aggressive, right-handed. So leading up to that scout, we all were like, okay, well, we kind of probably have to bring a little something different, because if this is how other teams are looking at us, we have to kind of make an adjustment. So yeah, having a Leah on, you know, our team really does help us just not just playing Nebraska, but just seeing what other teams see when they watch us.
With the Ken Ray Johnson here on Defend the Block. All right, let's talk NCAA tournament. You draw a Florida Gulf Coast team that has only lost twice. Take me through what it's like to prepare for an NCAA tournament game, because you just come off playing a ton of games against teams you know well, rivalry teams, in-league games, and now you're facing a team that, I mean, let's face it, you probably don't know a whole lot about when you see their name on the other side come Selection Sunday. So what are these first few days like as you get ready for Sunday, and what can you, as someone who's been through the tournament, glean from that process and kind of help the younger players out with?
Yeah, so when we seen we play them, we kind of knew a little bit about them because there's a player on that team that used to go to Ohio State. The player is from Ohio. She's a very good player. So we kind of know a little bit about her. She's kind of one of their leading scorers on their team. So we weren't, I guess we were a little more happier because we weren't totally caught off guard. You know, we know the team. We watched the team. And I also have a teammate on that team that played AAU with me. So I kind of know a little bit about them. I just didn't know they won their conference tournament. So they weren't just a completely random team that we had no idea, you know, who they were. So that's kind of a positive with playing them. But leading into the tournament, kind of how our practices go is we kind of prepare for anything. So one thing that we do a lot is like we, for our practice boys, we make every single practice boy like basically like the best player on a Big Ten team. So we'll take like a good player from each team and then we'll be like, okay, you're number whatever, you're a shooter, you're a scorer, you're a defender. So we kind of, you know, it's like an all-star team. So while we're practicing, we like, you know, they try to score every single time. They try their hardest. They really beat us up during practice just to, you know, face a whole bunch of pressure. So we know that if we can guard our boys for the practice squad, if we can defend them, if we can get past them, if we can master physicality and their quickness and their strength, then we should be prepared for any team. So that's kind of how it's been since I've been here at Michigan. It's like we kind of just have, you know, practice to get back to how we play also. So this last week, it hasn't been like scout specific because, of course, we don't know who we're playing. So we kind of have time to work on us. So we have time to, you know, put in some new plays, you know, look for some new reads out of our old plays, get people some confidence, people that don't really play a lot, get them in during practice. Coach has been saying a lot during practice, you know, get other people in to try to guard the best player because, you know, we're in the tournament now and it's not going to be just one best player on every team. It's going to be a team that, you know, knows how to score. So a lot of this is just getting focused and getting back to playing Michigan style basketball, you know, getting back to our toughness, our transition. We kind of got a little bit away from that, getting our shots up, putting 15, 20 minutes extra to get our shots up. So basically this time is just, you know, preparing, focusing more on us, because if we play our game, if we play how we play at the beginning of the season with our confidence and our ball movement and our physicality, you know, we can beat anybody. So we have to just get back to, you know, playing, doing us and our defensive principles and everything like that. So that's kind of what we've been working on this past couple of practices.
The NCAA tournament is what you and your teammates and everyone in college basketball works toward. It's a special event, even this year with it being a little bit different than normal. So how do you balance that? The enjoyment, the appreciation for getting to this. It's an accomplishment to make the tournament, but also realizing that, to your point, it's going to be the most challenging stretch of the season. You're going to play an excellent team every time you go out there. So how do you, especially as a fifth-year player, balance all of those emotions?
It's a little, I guess, easier for me because I've been through it. You know, I've been through it two or three times before this. So I kind of know how to get that balance. But one thing that is difficult is balancing all this with COVID and COVID protocols. That has been a struggle for us. We kind of see our boys and up in the bubble. We kind of are looking at their experience of like not being able to leave their hotel room and having to, you know, not really decide what they want to eat, having to be together all the time. So I don't think that us playing difficult teams every single day is going to be that difficult for us, because I mean, we kind of prepare for that throughout the season. Like the Big Ten is a very good conference, and you know, every single week we're playing someone that's good. So I'm not saying that it's going to be like, you know, easy for us, but we are, you know, I think we have adjusted to, you know, playing difficult teams. I mean, we play Northwestern twice in a week, so I mean, we're very used to playing very good teams every single week. But like we all say, just having to deal with protocol, having to, you know, get tested, having to focus on class and school, having to, you know, deal with maybe not being able to get in the gym much because we're going to be in Texas. We don't have our own gym. We're not here at Chrysler. So having to adjust to that, having to adjust to, you know, living by yourself. A lot of people live with roommates. A lot of us have, a couple of us have, you know, pets at home. So having to adjust to little things like that, I think is going to be the biggest struggle. But like you said, last year we didn't get a tournament. We weren't able to even, you know, compete. So our mentality this year is just, you know, I know it might suck. I know it's going to be hard, but I mean, we get to play, we get to compete. And we probably have less than a month of season left. Coach Rico just tells us, you know, we have three to four weeks left. Just focus in, lock in, and, you know, I have the rest of my life to, you know, have fun and do what I want to do. But for these last couple weeks of practice and games, I have to really lock in. So, I think that all of us are just have to adjust to, you know, the NCAA, basketball, school, COVID protocol. Not seeing your family, I think that'll be the biggest adjustment going to Texas.
And lastly, there aren't too many programs in college basketball that have both their men's and women's teams as top six seeds. What does it mean that Michigan is able to accomplish that? And how do you kind of feed off the men's program and vice versa and kind of help each other, especially with the uniqueness of this season?
Yeah, we feed off each other a lot. Even at the beginning of the season, we were the only program in the country to have undefeated teams for the first couple games that we had. So we do feed off each other a lot. You know, we have a lot of conversations with Coach Howard. We're always in his talking to him, you know, picking his brain a little bit. He picks our brain. He steps in and watches our practices sometimes. We share a lot. We do a lot of similar drills in practice just because, you know, our coach sees drills they do and she likes to drill. His coach will see things. I mean, Coach Howard will see things that we do and he'll take our drill just because, you know, it looks tough. Like Coach Howard would say, it looks tough. But we do have a lot of conversations throughout the season, and we're just so proud of each other. You know, when he got Coach of the Year, I told him how proud I was of him. You know, when I was made the defensive team, he told me he was proud. So it's just a lot. We're very close. We're very close to our boys team, and I think the fact that we're both, you know, good programs, it's very easy to talk to each other. You know, it's very easy to root for each other. We know we're both in the gym working super super hard every single day. When we have practice, they have practice, so we see each other a lot. But it really does mean a lot for our programs to just be as good as they are. Being top six seed in the NCAA tournament is really big. And it's really big for recruiting and future generations, because when future generations see that, they're going to be like, oh, well, I want to go to a program where not only where I'm playing on the women's team is good, but like I want to be surrounded about around greatness. And the fact that we're surrounded around a good men's program and how well they're doing is very motivating, and just watching them go out there and play as hard as they do and win these games and just perform at the ability that they're able to perform is very motivating for us to watch them play.
We really appreciate the time, continued success, and hopefully we've got six more games for both programs here over the next few weeks.
Yes, hopefully.
Let's transition to the men's side, and we have Eli Brooks, Wolverine senior guard from Spring Grove, Pennsylvania. He is in Indianapolis in the bubble. Eli, take us through what it's like in there. I'm sure it's not your typical NCAA tournament setup, that's for sure.
Yeah, we've just been in our rooms. You're allowed to move around a little bit, but not much. They try to keep you in your room. So I've been catching up on homework, playing video games with some of the guys. Before the quarantine happened, we were playing cards, spades and, euchre. So, we were teaching card games for people, like Franz. So it's been fun so far.
How is this, to your extent of knowing it now, different from what was happening in Ann Arbor and when you were traveling on the road? We talked to Coach Howard about, you know, the regular season was kind of a soft bubble. This is a little bit tighter. So what have you noticed that's different? And I mean, let's face it, it's not your normal NCAA tournament experience. So how are you and the players handling it so far?
So to start off, like you have to ask your ambassador to go certain places. So you can't just free roam. I think that's the biggest thing. Not being able to just go where you want to. Even if you do have a mask on, and you're socially distancing. But the guys are handling it pretty well. I mean, we have a bigger goal in mind, so it's easier to be in the bubble when you look at the bigger picture, and we're just trying to make the best of it.
Take me back to that regular season finale against Michigan State. You go up for that little floater in the lane. You come down awkwardly on your ankle. Take me to that moment and the few moments after when you don't know what the diagnosis was. You didn't know how serious it would be. What's going through your mind in those moments?
For me, I always think it's worse than what it actually is. My body reacts pretty well to different injuries, so. I was just fortunate enough to get back there faster than what I thought originally. So that was good.
When did you learn that it was probably just going to be a few days and you had to work off it? I mean, was it in the locker room that day or was it the next day? What was that timeline like?
Well, I got a x-ray image at MSU, and then once we got back, I got an MRI. And once we got the MRI back, and they told me there was no structural damage. That's when I kind of realized like I could be back on my own time whenever I feel comfortable with.
So would you deem yourself to have been 100% when you were playing this past weekend, or where is it at right now?
I wouldn't say 100%, but I'd say like 90. I mean, there's still, it doesn't limit me to do anything, but it's just like a little bit of pain. But nothing that limits my movement. It's just more of the pain and the swelling.
We were talking to Coach Howard about the fact that, you know, you didn't really have any practice leading up to the game on Friday. It took you a little bit of time to find your shot, and then it seemed like you hadn't missed any time. What's that process like in a game where you didn't really have much practice time? Do you kind of feel like that early going is maybe a more competitive practice than you're normally accustomed to?
Yeah, I mean, yeah, not having the practice time going up to that game is a little different than normal, but just trying to stay confident, know the shots are going to fall, just keep shooting the ball, stay confident, and things will you'll start to find a groove.
So I know that the Big Ten tournament didn't end the way that you and this team wanted it. How quickly did it take to get over that one, and did Selection Sunday and that process help?
I mean, we talked about it in the locker room, like, we can't let this define our season because we still got a bigger goal ahead of us. Like, let it soak in now because this is the last time we can lose and still be playing. So that's something that we emphasized. But selection to Sunday was big for a lot of people, everybody on the team and then all the staff, because for Coach Howard, that's the first time he had a selection show, being a coach, and then having Mike, Shondi, and all the freshmen having the first ones, just seeing their faces, it was pretty cool.
When we talked to you back toward the beginning of the season, we discussed your Jolly Green Giants story that you wrote after what happened last season when everything shut down, the season was canceled. Eli Brooks on that day, if you would have told him, hey, there's going to be a tournament, there's going to be a season, Michigan's going to be a one seed, what would one-year younger Eli Brooks be thinking in that moment?
I mean, it's crazy even now to be a one seed in the NCAA tournament where everybody grew up watching and wanting to be a top team in a region is big. So I would just be really excited. I'm just thinking about the times I used to watch March Madness when I was a little kid, wanting to be that team.
You are one of the few who will play for Michigan that has been on this stage and has appeared in the NCAA tournament, and you'll play more minutes in this run than you did per game back then. But is it different? Do you feel something a little bit extra? And how do you have to try to normalize that as best as you can and play like you're playing any other game?
Yeah, for sure. I remember being a freshman, sophomore, looking back at the film, and like when we had the end of the year recap, just wanted to be out there, having more of an impact. So to be able to get that opportunity my senior year, yeah, it adds pressure, but that's what we want. I think perform even better when we're under pressure. That's why you compete, because you want to have that.
It's crazy that, you know, all last week people were wondering, how's Eli? And now the question is, how's Isaiah? And obviously, we don't know what the next few weeks will look like for him. Well, you guys had a chance to play without him on Saturday. What was that like? What was the experience like? And what can you learn from that moving into this NCAA tournament?
Yeah, Isaiah always makes timely shots. I think that's something that we miss, just his outside shooting and his presence. Just getting the offense going. Second situations, but Brandon did a good job of stepping in, being assertive, but timely shots, I think, were the biggest thing that we missed out on. But I mean, he's still a vocal leader on the sideline. We heard him there. So that's good.
You came in with him. You guys are both seniors. You've been through a lot together on and off the floor. So when you heard the news, What's going through your mind? What's the emotion for you, and how do you help? I mean, it has to be a helpless feeling, right? To know that there's nothing you can do to help fix that injury. But what can you do as a friend, as a teammate, and as a guy who's had to deal with injuries before?
Yeah, I mean, I definitely feel for him because the only healthy season he really had was his freshman year. So, I mean, it's just tough, especially being so close away from a personal achievement and then being so close to a team goal that we had, not being able to get the opportunity to play in the Big Ten tournament for senior year. I mean, you just feel for a guy like that that's been here for 4 years and we've been through it together. But just trying to stay positive, make sure he feels like he's still a part of the team and he has a valuable impact of what he's doing, and just getting him healthy.
Some of the other players on this ball club, the strides that they have made have been so impressive. We didn't know a lot about how Mike Smith was going to acclimate himself into this roster for this season. He was replacing a guy in Xavier Simpson who really was the vocal leader of this team. So where have you seen that growth from him? And I mean, what was it like being out there on the floor with a guy who came up with 15 assists? I mean, it was one of the most remarkable performances in Big Ten tournament history. So where have you seen that growth from him?
I think the biggest strides is just being confident. I think he was hesitant on some of his shots early on in the season because maybe those people were saying, oh, he's just a shooter. But we always knew he was a very good facilitator. That's one of the reasons why Coach brought him in. But I think he was looking to pass the ball too much early on. But now that he's looking to score more, it's opening up more availability for passes and then making himself a threat.
Brandon Johns Jr., another guy you've been through a lot of battles with over the last few years, him being a junior. He earns that start. He has not played as much as I'm sure he would want to. Coach Howard talks a lot about staying ready so you don't have to get ready. How have you seen him do that this season, and why was he so ready to perform the way that he did on Saturday?
I think he watches a lot of extra film with the coaches, especially before that game. Just trying to dial in for the scouting report. I mean, that's just another guy that just needs confidence. So to be able to talk to him, be in his ear for certain things, because he's very talented, very skilled. He can do everything. Sometimes he just gets blocked by mental mistakes. So just staying in his ear, making sure he feels like he's doing the right thing. And like he has a positive impact, because he does. He's a very talented person, player, very athletic, strong, physical, does a lot of good things out there.
So are your parents going to be at all of these games?
No, they're not going to be at the first two, but they were here at the Big Ten tournament. My uncle's going to be here, as well as my aunt and my niece. So, that'll be fun to see my family up there.
What's it been like to finally get a chance to play in front of some fans for the first time? I mean, that's been the strangest thing this whole season is watching you guys play with nobody or very, very few people there. So what was the pick-me-up like over this past weekend?
I mean, I didn't know what to expect. I mean, like, you always hear a number, but you never know how many people that actually is. They just throw numbers at you and percentages. But being able to see fans up there, it was great, especially after big shots. It helped the game. It made the game even more fun. than what it is.
You look always so calm, cool, and collected. It doesn't look like things really bother you at any stretch, but you know, this is your senior year. This is the NCAA tournament. You never know what this tournament can bring, good or bad. How do you compartmentalize that while also, I'm sure you want to enjoy this. You want to make sure that this is what you work for. This is what you put in all the hours in during the spring and summer. So how do you balance that, especially not just as a senior, but as a senior who had a tournament taken away from you last year?
Yeah, I mean, just knowing that it could be one game and you're out. I mean, knowing it's one game and you're out if you lose, I mean, it puts a lot of pressure on everybody, because I remember being a freshman, not wanting those seniors to go out with a loss. We wanted to go the whole way. You felt one game short. It just feels like you feel for the senior. So I can't imagine. I can imagine what the freshman, sophomore, and juniors feel like. But now being a senior, just having that urgency of when to get to the national championship again and win it all. I mean, we just have to continue what we're doing, buy in, and just play Michigan basketball.
Well, Eli, we appreciate the time. Can't wait to see you and the team out there on Saturday and beyond, and enjoy that bubble as best as you can. Again, I know this isn't the typical NCAA tournament experience, but the championship's still all the same if you guys can get it done. I know that.
Yeah. Well, thank you.
We begin our previews of the two Michigan opponents that are possible on Saturday with a member of the Mount St. Mary's broadcast team, a good friend, Adam Pohl. Adam and I work together in minor league baseball, and Adam, it's so crazy how things can intertwine when it comes to sports, broadcasting, whatever else. How the heck are you?
It's a small world, isn't it, Brian? I'm so excited to be with you today, and obviously, you know, the Mount is one of the smallest Division I schools in the country. It's of the 350, however many D1 schools, it's one of the 5 to 10 smallest. So for us to be in the dance for a fourth time in 14 years, it's really, really special.
So you told me before we came on that you had a story about Michigan. So please go ahead.
Oh my goodness. Yeah. So this is something, but, now, some of your most ardent fans and listeners might remember the classic Mount Michigan game from 4 years ago. It was actually during the Mount's last NCAA tournament season. The Mount had a great team in 2017. Leading scorer was the shortest player in the nation, a guy named Junior Robinson. That was electric. Here it is, late November, early December of 2016, and we are at Michigan as a part of a 9-game road trip, this insane, like 8 or 9-game trip in 19 days. And I was traveling full-time with the team. We never went home. So I ended up using my radio equipment as my dirty laundry hamper, Brian, right? And what I would do is that I would, before every game, I would take my dirty laundry out of my radio bag gear, and then we'd go to the game, right? So we go to Michigan. I'm setting up. The Michigan broadcasters are setting up, and I just throw my equipment open like it's nothing, you know, nothing's going on, and all my dirty laundry just goes flying in the air all over the Chrysler Center, you know. They were laughing at me. I'll tell you this. The broadcasters from Michigan at that time, they don't remember anything about that game. But they remember that some small-town broadcaster came and threw his dirty boxer shorts all over the Chrysler area. So, that was my moment at Michigan. I probably turned as red as a ripe tomato during that one. But there you go. And, of course, this would be the next time after that moment that the Mount would play Michigan.
That is crazy. Yeah, I'll have to ask Terry Mills and Tony Butler about that one to see if they remember the dirty laundry broadcaster of 2016-17. That is great. So, Adam, let's talk about this team. Early on in the season, They went through a ton of adversity. Jalen Gibbs, who was averaging 16.5 points a game, he opted out. There were a couple of pauses due to COVID in that stretch as well. So to get to this point, was it unexpected amongst Mount fans? How did they get back to the NCAA tournament after all of that?
So the Mountain is usually, you know, it is one of the top two programs, undoubtedly, as far as legacy, tradition, history for basketball in the Northeast Conference, which is, of course, you know, one of the smaller conferences in Division I basketball. But Mount St. Mary's, after that season that I talked about, 2017, the Mount had a great team in 2018. They were a two seed. They got upset in the quarterfinals of their tournament. And then due to graduation of players, but also they had some really talented players that were freshmen, and almost all of those guys left. They up transferred. One of them's in the tournament as a starter for Georgetown, Don Carey, a guard. So Mount St. Mary's in 2019, Coach Dan Engelstad's first season, had one of the two or three youngest teams in the nation, and it was just known that they were going to really struggle. And they came in ninth place in a 10-team league. Never happens in the NEC. They came in ninth place, and I think they overachieved in 2019. They were an NEC tournament team, but not a threat to win it in 2020. Of course, we didn't have a tournament, or we didn't have an NCAA tournament. But coming into this 2021 season, you had three guys on that team, or actually four guys, because Jalen Gibbs, who opted out midway through the season, four guys that were three-year starters. So it was one of these situations where, even though they were so, you know, they were not a competitive team to win the league early on, those freshmen stayed with the program. They invested the time and effort into these guys, and now they were going to be a top half of the league team this year. So the fact that this group of players, along with a few transfers coming in, just kind of a great group of juniors, has been able to take them to the NCAA tournament this year. It's a great story, and it's really, really a special team.
And one of the more special players that you see in college basketball, just 5'8", Damian Chongqui, seems to be the heart and soul of this team. How does he, maybe not overcome, but utilize that small stature to become really one of the most exciting players in that Northeast Conference?
It's amazing, but quite often you see that the best players in the NEC are undersized players. Because if you're 6'2", 6'3" guard, and you're an elite player for that size, you know, you're not going to probably be going to Mount St. Mary's. But a guy that might be 5'8", you know, if he was a 6'2" guard, you know, he'd be a high major player, but he's not because of his size. And Chongqui, you know, might be that kind of player. He's not this incredible athlete either, but he's just got incredible savvy. He's a player that quite often will take one or two shots in the whole first half. You know, he's a distributor first and foremost, but he's one of these guys where, okay, 5 minutes left, we're down by six, give me the ball, right? And he was undoubtedly the clutchest player in the NEC. And the funny thing about this season for the Mount is that they lost so many close games in conference play early. They were around 500 here midway through the conference. But it was almost, you look at it, they either were blowing teams out or they were losing by a few points. And down the stretch, when they got on this big run, all of a sudden they turned it around. They started winning every close game, and Chongqui was the main factor. So he's undoubtedly the heart and soul of the team. It's funny because he's a quiet guy off the court. You know, he's got a tragic past. His mother was murdered when he was very young. His father is paralyzed due to also a gunshot wound. Obviously, he's had a very tough upbringing that so many kids have in Baltimore. But Chongqui is—he's a rock, and he wasn't even he was a walk-on to the Mount. It's an unbelievable story. Wow. He earned his scholarship after that freshman year, in which he was a starter. So he's one of this group of three-year starters for the team, and he's the only undersized player on the team. So that's one of the things that favors the Mount. They were really kind of the biggest, strongest front court team in the league, and Chongqui was that guard that could carry the weight of scoring and distributing and making those big players really effective, not only defensively, but offensively.
Yeah, it's a great point about the Mount St. Mary's size because, yeah, he's the only one that kind of stands out as that quote-unquote undersized player. And I think that might have something to do with the fact that the Mount nationally is top 20 in terms of scoring defense. Because of that size, have they been able to really take advantage of that against some smaller NEC teams? What do you attribute their defensive success to?
Yeah, you know, the Mount plays very slow. And, you know, if you had to think about how Mount St. Mary's would play in a Big Ten style, the Mount plays similar this season to a Wisconsin. They were able to get a transfer from George Washington University named Mezzi Offram. Mezzi is a 6'8" guy that's extremely athletic and has an outstanding build. He would be a starting center on any other team in the NEC, and he's the Mount starting three. The Mount has their power forward is a guy named Nana Opoku, the defensive player of the year in the NEC. He's another 6'8", 6'9" guy, very long and lean, major hops. He's the shot blocker, rim protector. And then the Mount's got another three-year starter, Malik Jefferson, a big 6'9", that's kind of an overpowering guy for the NEC. But, you know, going against a team like Michigan, you know, he's a guy that can kind of hold his own defensively. So they don't look like a usual NEC team that can just score a lot of points against a smaller opponents. And when they go up against the big dogs, they've got no chance to get stops. So the Mount is a more dangerous NEC team in that regard because they're going to minimize possessions. They're going to try to score in the final 10 seconds of the clock. You know, they don't have outstanding guard play offensively. But if you have an off shooting night, they're able to rebound the ball and make it a tough, low scoring game.
Lastly, tell me about the head coach, Dan Engelstad. When he took over, he basically had a blank canvas. There were no juniors or no seniors. A lot of the focal points of the Jamion Christian era had moved on. How has he been able to shape this roster and really create his culture from scratch?
Culture. I mean, that's a huge, huge word because Mount St. Mary's in 2019 had the NEC Rookie of the Year, a player named Votto Morse, who was a third-team All-CAA player at JMU this season. And Dan, you know, just wasn't a great fit with Votto, and they decided to part ways after last season. And you would think, oh my God, this guy's your leading scorer. You know, what are you doing? And then, of course, you've got the Jalen Gibbs situation this season where Gibbs thought his playing time might decrease middle of the season more than likely, and he decides to step away from the team, even though he was the leading scorer on the team. And then you're still in the NCAA tournament. So he's been able to really build this team. I know that Dan, in time, wants to play faster than they do, but they're a team that's going to run an offensive set almost every time down the floor. They're not going to score much in transition. They're not an outstanding three-point shooting team. So they're a little bit of a throwback, you know, if that makes sense. You know, they don't play that 21st style of run-and-gun basketball where you see such a high percentage of shots being from behind the three-point line. But in that same regard, they're by far the best defensive team in the NEC, and that's why they're here. You know, they were able to win against Wagner, the other great defensive team who was the one seed in the league, and then they went up against a team that's much more like an NEC team, Bryant, that can really score. Bryant beat UMass, lost by one to Syracuse this year. They were 10-0 at home, but they had not played them out this year, and you know, they just couldn't score as they're used to doing against Mount St. Mary's. So for the Mount, they're trying to beat you, you know, 64-59. And obviously, it would be a tough matchup against such an outstanding offensive team like Michigan. But for the Mount, it's all about making the dance, showing off the school. Obviously, Mount St. Mary's, the history of the program, 49 years with Jim Phelan. I mean, the coach of the year in NCAA basketball, D1, gets the Jim Phelan Award. So the Mount is a team that has incredible history in collegiate basketball, and we get to put that on display again here. And it's just such so wonderful to see.
No doubt. Adam Pohl of the Mount St. Mary's broadcast team, we appreciate the time. You told me about a great stat you were going to finish up with. So what do you got?
I got one more, baby. Take out your pencils, your pens. Here we go, okay? Mount St. Mary's, this is now a sixth time the Mount, since they've been in Division I basketball since 1989, six times in the tournament for little Mount St. Mary's since 1989. So that's a beautiful thing. Now, of course, they've gone to the play-in game of the first four often. And in 2014, they lost in the first four. So the Mount, four times prior, Mount St. Mary's has played in the round of 64. All right, you ready for this, Brian?
Mm-hmm.
The team the Mount lost to in the 1-16 matchup in the round of 64, all four times, won the national championship the next year. So sorry for you Michigan 2021 fans, but what I'm saying is if the Mount loses to Michigan, mark it down, You know, you're going to be hearing that incredible Michigan fight song reigning over the national champs in 2022. It's happened four times in a row. It's one of the most random stats ever. The last time being Villanova in 2017, the Mount, you know, lost to Villanova. They won the 2018 title. It's 4 for 4. So mark that one away. So that's why you got to root for the Mount to beat Texas Southern, because it means Michigan will win the 2022 national title.
Wow, that's incredible. Yeah, 2017, a loss to Villanova. Of course, Michigan fans know that 2018, Nova won it all. 2008 was North Carolina. They won it in 2009. Michigan State in 99. Right. They won it in 2000. And back in 95, it was a loss to Kentucky. They won it all in 96. That is bonkers. Wow. You brought it, man. You promised something good, and you brought it.
Yeah, and I'll tell you this, Jim Phelan, the longtime coach, that first time he made it to the NCAA tournament, he was a Division II national champion. And Jim Phelan, they said, you know, Jim, you're going to be facing a Kentucky team that's got five starters that were McDonald's All-Americans. And what do you think about that? He said, you know what? We just stopped at McDonald's on our bus ride up here today, so I think we got a chance. That was an all-timer right there from Jim Phelan, you know, as he was like a 70-year-old coach in the NCAA tournament.
That is fantastic. Well, boy, I didn't expect the bookends to this interview to be the way that they transpired, but by gosh, that was worth it, Adam Pohl. It's weird not doing these about a high A minor league baseball game like we did back in the day, but I really appreciate you stopping by.
No doubt about it. And hey, yeah, best of luck, and we'll talk again soon.
Let's get the skinny on the Texas Southern squad as we get set for Thursday night's matchup against Mount St. Mary's. The winner will face off with the Wolverines coming up on Saturday. For that, we bring in the play-by-play broadcaster for Texas Southern basketball, Larry Hale. And Larry, first off, you're in the bubble, so give fans an idea of what it's like in there so far.
Well, everything's restricted. You see people in passing, not a lot of conversation unless you're with each other's team. I saw Rick Pitino. I saw Big Garza from Iowa. We came in Saturday night after we beat Prairie View in the championship game. We came in on the charter, and with the time change, everybody had to get adjusted to that. You had to stay in your room for the first 2 days because we have to test every morning. Every team has to test every morning. So contact is really limited here. They said today that we could go outside, get some fresh air, but you can't go too far, not even be on the sidewalk too long. So it's really restricted and very safe.
It's a unique experience. There's no doubt about that. Now, you mentioned the travel after the championship game on Saturday. Boy, it had to feel like it was a team of destiny in that championship game based on what happened in the semifinal against Jackson State. Michael Weathers, the game-tying three at the buzzer in regulation, then he won it with a late three in overtime. What was that game like to call and to watch, and how did this Texas Southern team pull it off and then win the championship the next day?
Well, it was a thrill. It was a thrill to call. I'm very privileged to be able to make that call for the Tiger fans and Texas Southern University. Glad I was able to keep my composure. I guess it was a will of destiny. Because Prairie View beat us twice. And you got tired of the talk around town. They're like 50 miles away from us. So it's a lot of trash talk. And these guys are trash talking all week at the tournament, flashing their jerseys and things of that nature. So this team really came in dialed in. And this time when we won it for something, not just a regular swag game. We won it. We knew what was on the line. And it was a trip to the NCAA tournament to go to the bubble.
Weather certainly seems to be the straw that stirs the drink for Texas Southern. What other Tigers should Michigan fans be watching in that game against Mount St. Mary's and then on Saturday against the Wolverines if they're able to advance?
Well, can't forget about his Robin. He's Batman, and Robin is Jordan Gilliam, a 6'4 guard out of Houston, Texas, who can really complement Weathers well, handles the ball pressure really well. Also, you've got another guy in Jordan Carl Nicholas, number 5, very high motor, likes to play beneath the rim, Yahuza's Rosses. Also, Galen Alexander, who's a transfer from Georgetown, can really shoot the three ball and get down and dirty. Yahuza's Rosas, he does the dirty work for us whenever he's in the basketball game. Justin Hopkins. Everyone is very unique on this basketball team. Everyone plays their role. This is a different basketball team than what we were in the very beginning of the season. Didn't have a lot of non-conference games to play, so we had to kind of get adjusted on the fly. But once we got used to playing with each other, everyone gelled in, and they love playing with each other, and they love Texas Southern.
Hey, you mentioned that challenging non-conference slate, and I know that's been a staple for Texas Southern over the years. Washington State, Oklahoma State, Wyoming, St. Mary's, Auburn, BYU. There were two games against LSU and TCU planned on the road. How does that really help get this team ready for moments like this?
Let them know, hey, man, you guys put your shorts on the same way we do. We played the quote-unquote big boys early in the season for the first 13 games. A lot of these guys that we have, they don't have their deer-in-the-headlight mentality. They're not starstruck because they come from the big programs. You got Weathers, who came from Oklahoma State. You've got Galen Alexander, who came from Georgetown. So these guys bring that swag with them, and we've got swag of our own. And some teams in the conference are built for this type of play, to go head-to-head with the big boys at the NCAA tournament. Not to come here and get blown out by 40 or 50 points. Everybody gets a pat on the back and a T-shirt and go home. No, we're trying to win a few games and stay a while. That's the mentality of this basketball team right now.
And I'm sure that stems from the head coach and Johnny Jones. He took over for Mike Davis after he had gotten this program into the NCAA tournament. So tell me about Coach Jones, how he's created this culture, especially with, as you talked about, some of those high major transfers.
Almost the same style as Coach Davis. Coach Davis believed in transfers, JUCO D1 transfers, loaded with D1 transfers and JUCO transfers. Coach Johnny Jones has recruited some kids out of high school, but most of the guys that are helping us really make moves right now are our transfer guys. And he believes in a philosophy. He believes in family. He believes in hard work. He believes in flipping the switch on when it's time to flip it on. And that's just how he is. He's a very professional coach. This is not his first time coaching in the NCAA tournament. He took North Texas in 2010. Very excited to get back. And he's very caring as a head coach. He's a great guy. And I'm glad he's with us, because after Coach Mike Davis left, he was like, man, I wonder who we're going to get. Because Mike Davis has set the bar so high. 6 years, 5 NCAA tournament trips, and we went again. But we were ineligible to go because of the APR situation. But we went on a run of 5 straight NCAA tournament trips, and we kind of got spoiled. Kind of knew your way around the buildings without even having to ask the usher where to go. So with, you know, Mike Davis, a lot of the coaches were glad when he left. But Coach Johnny Jones came in and put the staple on this program. And in his third season now, we're in the NCAA tournament.
Yeah, no doubt. It was a quick resumption of NCAA tournament berths. Before I let you go, I got to ask, the nickname is the Chatterbox. How'd that come about?
Well, I had aspirations of being a rapper. And I was working at this amusement park called Astroworld in Houston. And I really talk a lot. I do. I have a very high talking motor. And the young lady, the little girl was like, well, you just go on and on, just like a chatterbox. I said, I'm going to keep that. I'm going to keep that. I'm going to use that one day. And one day I was MC Chatterbox. And then when I got into radio back in 93 at KTSU, I started as a volunteer. I just kept the name and just changed the C-H-A-T-T-A-B-O-X, Chatterbox. And that's how it is. I've kept it like that. I've tried to drop the name. People's like, well, what happened to Chatterbox? I hear Larry Hale, but where's Chatterbox? What happened to him? It's the same guy, but it's just they're just so used to the name. So I include it.
Well, Chatterbox, we really appreciate the insight, the time. That's an awesome story. And we wish you all the best. Hopefully you're going to be chatting about Michigan on Saturday.
Yeah, Juwan Howard was one of my guys. Juwan Howard and Jalen Rose. I really grew up. I was a Fab Five guy coming up. I'm 50 years old, so I was in that era when they were doing that thing. They really set the precedent for Michigan. Chris Webber, Royce Jackson, they really set the precedent for Michigan and set the precedent for young men to be their own and do what they can do and just be yourself. And, hey, I just think Michigan's a great program. Juwan Howard came back to Michigan for the love of the program to get it back, to get it, to keep it going. And you see he's done that. So, hey, hats off to the Wolverines. But we got to get past Mount St. Mary's first, and then we'll deal with the Wolverines of Michigan.
Looking forward to it. Larry, thanks so much for the time, and all the best here in this NCAA tournament.
Thanks for having me.
That's going to do it for this loaded preview of the NCAA tournament here on Defend the Block. We will next come to you with In the Trenches on Thursday, and then we'll have a post-game edition of Defend the Block after the Wolverines and either Texas Southern or Mount St. Mary's coming up on Saturday evening. Thanks to Akenere Johnson, Eli Brooks, to Adam Pohl, and Larry the Chatterbox Hale. Oh, that was fun, wasn't it? Pretty cool nickname there. Thanks to Tom Weirot, Sarah Van Meter, Lisa Nicholson for all of their work in getting these interviews organized. It's a busy time, but we want to bring you as much as we can as we start to detail what could be a special March and, fingers crossed, April for Michigan basketball. I'm Brian Bush. Thank you so much for listening, and go Blue.
Thanks for listening to today's edition of Defend the Block, part of our Michigan Athletics Podcast Network, MGo Blue Podcasts. The preceding is a Learfield IMG College presentation of the Michigan Sports Network.